Hello, everyone, and welcome to The New Yorkers, a podcast by New York City Cop. I am your host, Kelly Kopp, a published photographer, New York City tour business owner, real estate content creator, podcaster, and above all else, a New Yorker.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next Brooklyn-bound train is now arriving.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
With me today, I have Megan Marad. She is a New York City tour guide who loves sharing history, food, theater, as well as fun things to do in New York City. She is a content creator, internet personality, and a great friend of mine as well. But above all else, she is a New Yorker. Welcome to the show, Megan. How are you doing today?
I'm great. I'm so honored to be here. Thank you.
I'm so honored that you're here. You know, because you're so interesting and you know so much about this city. And we're going to learn a lot today. Our listeners are going to learn a lot about New York City as well. And so I just think you have just an amazing perspective and everything about New York City. So thank you. So first of all, where do you live and where are you from?
Well, I'm originally from Florida, but I moved to New York City in 2004. So long ago. It was like 20 years ago. I was born in Orlando, but I grew up in Palm Beach Gardens.
Nice. Lived in Orlando, I think most of my listeners know, too. That's for like 30 years.
Yeah, we're both Floridians turned New Yorkers. Yeah. And everyone always makes jokes about how we did it the wrong way.
Me too.
You're supposed to go from like New York to Florida, but I went from Florida to New York.
All the time. Plus, I'm getting a little bit older, so people are like, you went the wrong direction, you know? I'm like, well, I love New York. You know, it has the four seasons, blah, blah, blah. You know, and they're quick. At this age, at my age, the seasons are like turning a page in a book. Boom, 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 super fast, you know. So once we're cold and sick of the snow, then all of a sudden spring's here and then summer.
That's the Floridian part of me that never left, is I love the warmth. So the winters are very hard for me.
So you lived here how long, you said?
I moved here in 2004. So I've been here for 20 years
now. Good for you. That's a nice amount of time. That's a really good amount of time to live in New York City, to be considered a New Yorker, in my opinion. So when did you start becoming a creator, and what was your life before becoming a creator? Like, what did you do before that first?
What's interesting is content creator is a fairly new profession, but when you look at my very quixotic journey through life, I'm not sure there was ever a time when I wasn't a content creator in some way or gaining skills that would let me be a content creator. Growing up, I always wanted to be a Broadway star. So I took just all of the acting classes that you could ever have. And of course, at least the way that I create content, I'm usually on camera. So all of those classes teaching you how to perform, how to deliver content, how to memorize facts, how to be on a camera was very, very useful. I then sort of switched over into directing. I was actually an assistant director at the Royal Shakespeare Company, and I was an assistant director on Broadway. I worked with Trevor Nunn. He directed Les Mis, a little known musical. Directing is another thing that you really need when you're a content creator. You are very much your own director, having these thoughts and ideas. I was a history major in college, so that gave me all the skills for how to research things, how to tell stories, how to try to make the facts become human and entertaining. And then throughout time, they all kind of just melded together. Oh, and I went to a high school of performing arts where I actually studied video editing.
Nice.
So I was learning how to edit on an old Avid machine. So now being able to edit on my tiny mobile phone is such a dream.
You do really well, too.
Thank you.
I actually need you to teach me how to do all that.
I mean, I recently took a couple of courses, which were really, really beneficial. But I feel like all of those things kind of combined I was working as a tour guide, and interestingly enough, I wanted to create content to pivot out of tour guiding, and it just ended up pivoting me even more into tour guiding. But I think I really started creating that content. I mean, you could date my first post back to 7 years ago, but I would say it was really during the pandemic that I was really trying to put that content out and grow. Nice.
Did you mention you were an opera singer?
I am an opera singer. Yes.
That's amazing. And are you a professional opera singer? What are you?
I mean, that's an interesting thing as well, because most opera singers, you know, they start training opera at a very young age. They go to a conservatory and they really do this very in-depth training, perfecting their ah vowel. While I was trying to be a Broadway star, and I was always getting frustrated because I couldn't belt, I couldn't sing pop, I couldn't sing rock. But it turned out that I had this very natural sort of operatic voice, and all of my training came just through independent study and working my bum off with teachers. And I was very lucky. There's a lot of smaller opera companies in the city, like Amore Opera, which like really took a chance on me and cast me in a lot of their soubrette roles. And I've had a lot of really amazing opportunities playing roles like Papagena in Magic Flute, Despina in Così Fan Tutte.
Fascinating and fun.
It's super fun.
That's really cool. Do you sing around the house now? Do you sing around New York City?
I do. My neighbors probably hate me because I warm up my voice almost every day, and I'm a very high soprano, like Magic Flute, singing those high F sopranos. And, you know, when I was really pursuing musical theater, you have to wake up super early to go to these auditions. So they'd be hearing those high Fs, high Gs. I warmed up to a high G at like 6 in the morning.
Well, that's interesting. And so you live where?
I live in Harlem.
You live in Harlem here in Manhattan.
Correct.
Very nice. I live in Washington Heights, which is a neighborhood just above you.
Yeah, we're neighbors.
Which is interesting because what I think, I don't think you bother your neighbors at all, in my opinion, because that's all of the beauty. That's the beauty of New York, is to hear these opera singers or whomever down the hallway singing or playing their instruments, whatever people do, what talented New Yorkers do. Because I actually, for 5 years, lived across the hallway from an opera singer, and I thought it was fascinating, and it just made me smile to hear her singing all the time. You know, almost every morning, every day. And I walked down the hallway and hear her, and I just thought it was the coolest thing.
What's interesting is I'm not the only opera singer in my building. There's two others. There's another soprano. And sometimes we'll like, I've never met her. I don't know what she looks like. In fact, I shouldn't even say that's a she. I have guy friends who can sing as high as me. But this other soprano will sometimes have like these soprano offs, and you'll see us or hear us trying to sing very high. And there's also like a bass baritone. And then there's a chamber music ensemble where the owner, he is in our building, and they'll rehearse in our building. So even though we're in Harlem, which I think when I go home to Florida, people might be like, Harlem, it's so dangerous.
Right.
The reality is there's two sopranos having a soprano off while a bass baritone sings and a chamber music ensemble rehearses in the building.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think I love Harlem. I love the neighborhood. Two of my good friends, Teddy and Ellie, and their new little daughter live there. My dermatologist is in Harlem. You know, it's only a subway stop or two away from me. I'm in Harlem at least walking through it once a week, twice a week. It's a great neighborhood. I love the Apollo Theater right there, too. Have you been there? You should go sing there for amateur night.
Oh, my goodness. The Harlem audiences are so discerning. They know.
I love the Harlem audience.
They know good art. They would know my ah vowel isn't perfect. but the Apollo, I've very shamefully never seen a show, but I have taken many tour groups on tours through there, led by Billy Mitchell. Mm-hmm. And if anyone is lucky enough, well, first of all, just to come to New York City, I consider yourself lucky.
Right.
But if you want to have just this magical Harlem experience, I really think you need to take the Harlem tour with Billy Mitchell.
Oh, that's a good plug. I don't even know who Billy Mitchell is.
I always forget his exact position, but that's he's been working with the Apollo for most of his life. He has these incredible stories, like firsthand stories, things that he has witnessed. He has passion. He has love for the history and the venue.
I need to meet him. I need to take one of his tours.
Absolutely.
I love going to the Apollo amateur night. I like to go when it becomes the semifinals because, I mean, they're all really, really good. And like you said, the Harlem audience is very discerning and very fun, too, because I was laughing the whole time because, I mean, people are yelling, yay, and booing. You boo. They give you like this thumbs up and thumbs down to see if they go to the next round. It was I've taken friends there a couple times now, and it's just a great time, you know, and there's some super talented people there.
I mean, so many people got their starts at the Apollo.
Right.
Ella Fitzgerald, Billie Holiday, Michael Jackson.
Really?
Yeah, he was the Jackson 5 performed at the Apollo. I mean, it's really the very first American Idol.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like the tradition that would lead into American Idol, this idea of having these up and coming stars performing, singing, dancing, and having this audience. As you mentioned, the audience votes. They vote with their cheers. They vote with their boos. I really need to go and see it in person.
And the MC who we generally have is just, he's so witty and hilarious. And then during the intermission, you go out and you can, you know, talk to him, and he's so funny. And it's just a really fun time. I recommend it to anybody who's visiting New York too. Try to go to the Apollo, the what's it called again?
Amateur Night
Amateur Night at the Apollo. It's really fun. And then I also like to go Sylvia's Restaurant, one of my favorite restaurants in the city right there, which is Southern Cooking right there, just a couple blocks away. And then I think Red Rooster is right next to it, too.
It is.
Two of my favorite restaurants in Harlem. Have you been to Sylvia's yet?
I've been to Sylvia's many times. There is such good food in Harlem. You have Sylvia's.
Gosh, yes.
You have Red Rooster. You have Melba's.
I was just going to say Melba's.
My personal favorite fried chicken. And I feel like saying you even have a favorite fried chicken in Harlem is just asking for someone to come out of the woodwork and be like, you're wrong.
Yep.
But my personal favorite is Charles Pan fried chicken.
Oh, it's so good.
I fed this to my fiance very early in the pandemic when they were still at, I think, their second location in Harlem. And he ate this fried chicken and he broke down crying because it was so delicious.
I know him too. So this is me. That's why I'm laughing.
Oh, my goodness. Like this grown man crying because the chicken was so good. And we recently discovered their fried shrimp.
Oh, boy.
So good.
Oh my gosh, I'm going back. I'm going there actually on my way home, probably.
So good.
But you feel like, you know, as a woman, you know, women in general in this world have to be aware of their surroundings. So you feel comfortable in Harlem, walking through Harlem, correct? And you take the H. What train do you take all the time?
I take the 3 usually.
Oh, you take the 3. Okay.
But, I mean, because people are listening, they're not seeing this podcast.
Right.
Just to try to give you an image of me. If you don't know what I look like right now, I am wearing this yellow poofy dress that some people is kind of like a modern Belle in Beauty and the Beast, like this little jacket. I have my hair up in like a little braided twist because I want to be a Disney princess.
Yes.
I also,
and you are, you know, you do carry yourself like that. I love that. Yeah. I haven't literally thought about that, but you do.
I also am white appearing on the outside. Interestingly enough, my last name, Marad, is a Syrian name. It means like of hope or with intention. But just to like, I wanted to give you an idea of how I look so you can make your own assumption of like whether or not I should feel safe or not feel safe. And I walk around dressed in my little yellow dress.
Yep.
Often with a camera out filming things, and usually everyone's really nice. I've befriended my MTA workers, like they know me, they always say good morning. My neighbors know me.
And you lived there how many years?
I've lived there for 15 years.
Wow. So you've seen it go through a lot of changes too.
Let's take a quick break. Hey there, I'm Bellamy Young. I'm an actor and a producer. I've been working with the global humanitarian organization CARE, and I am so excited to invite you along for my new podcast, She Leads with CARE. Each week, you'll meet some incredible women who have changed their lives and their communities.
We raise our voices for people who don't raise their voices to defend themselves.
Listen to She Leads with CARE now on your favorite podcast platform. New episodes every Tuesday.
I mean, where I have lived, I feel very lucky. As I mentioned, there's like classical music. There's a little restaurant 2 blocks away from me. And the first Monday of every month, they host this. It's called the Sugar Hill Salon. It's Black and Brown musicians who play classical music by Black and Brown composers.
Wow.
And like, you just sit there and listen to this amazing music. You can then go to, in the summertime, they move from the indoor venue to a nearby park.
Right.
So you're like walking through this park at night in Harlem, and you're listening to classical music. There's kids running around. There's pets running around. And I mean, really, I've just had everyone be very friendly, very neighborly. The food is phenomenal.
Incredible.
Mm-hmm. Last night at 1 a.m., David's my fiance, David and I
just, hello.
I will. David and I just stood out on the street with our cameras taking pictures of the moon.
Yeah.
And then we made a video about how I was taking photos of the moon at 1 a.m. just outside of a park in Harlem.
Yeah.
So that's been primarily my experience.
Yes.
Of course, it's a city, so something bad can happen literally anywhere in the city at any point.
Well, I think even small towns, things can happen anywhere, you know?
I actually read that the crime rate's higher on Palm Beach than it is in New York. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to say that like nothing happens, because obviously things do happen. But just my personal experience has been that the majority of interactions that I have in New York City and in my neighborhood have been very, very positive, very, very friendly, very, very family oriented and arts oriented.
I love that. And same with me, who so you're at 125. What do you get off at?
I'm off of 145th.
So, I'm at 175 on the A train. I'm just a couple stops up above you, you know. And so, and like I said, I'm in Harlem all the time. I love my neighborhood, Washington Heights, too. So for viewers who don't know where geographically, you know, we live, we're in Upper Manhattan. We're above Central Park, you know. So, you know, Harlem and then Washington Heights, and then the Bronx is a little bit above us, you know, over the East River or the Harlem River, it becomes. But I've lived where I live 10 years in my neighborhood, and I absolutely love it. And just quickly, I want to touch on, how do you feel as a woman, too, like riding the subway? Do you ride? I know you have to take the subway all the time, and you take it morning, noon, and night, I assume, at different times of day. And how do you feel about that? Just so our listeners can hear or get a feel of what you say.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think everybody has their own MO when it comes to the subway and like what time of night they'll ride the subway. I'm someone who, if the train is running, I will take the subway, because I would rather spend the money on literally anything else than a cab or an Uber.
100% with you.
And like last night, I was riding it at 1 a.m. I was with my fiance, but I would have done it even if I wasn't
and
with
you do,
him.
I guess, then. You have to take it alone at sometimes late at night.
I mean, depending on like what work's doing, if I'm seeing a show, if I'm covering a restaurant, if I'm like, I'll have a tour group next week where I'll be done, I think, at 10:30 p.m. or 11 p.m. and then have to catch the train home. And, you know, there are some exciting characters that would probably make some really good short stories. And I think that that can alarm a lot of people, especially if they're not used to seeing such characters. But for the most part, I have experienced that there are people who just want to sleep, and it's like the warm place where they can sleep.
That's a good point too.
You know, or if, you know, perhaps they're doing something like drugs, they just want to do that away from people. They don't want to.
Right.
They're not looking for for trouble, has been my experience.
Right. For the most part, yes, I agree. I've never had any issues thus far as well. I don't even really think about it. I play in my phone. I play a game on my phone when I'm on the subway, and you know, and I just do my thing. And you know, I see for, you know, just to finish up about the subway. The one or two stories that happen here in a week or something that you hear on the news, there's a million nice stories that people don't know about or see or hear that New Yorkers are doing to help others, to help tourists, or, you know, get up and take, you know, offer their seat for someone, you know, just so many things that are happening daily that are nice stories that you don't see or hear.
You think about like how many people ride the subway on any given day,
I think it's 3 million a day.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
So you have, I mean, we have like over 8.5 million people who live in the five boroughs. So millions of people riding the train. You compare that to a highway, there's dangers and risks on both. Like if you're driving on a highway, something bad can happen. If you're riding on the subway, something bad can happen. I would be lying if I said nothing bad ever happens on the subway, or that there was never a moment where I felt scared on the subway. But for the most part, I'm a big fan of the subway. Mm-hmm. And if you are someone who's coming and just wants to do something to feel a little bit safer, a lot of times people like to be in the same car as the conductor.
Well, that's such a valid, good point. I like that. Mm-hmm.
So the conductor is usually in the middle of the train. There are these things. If you go to the middle of the platform, if you look up, there are, I call them zebra boards. It's like this little tiny rectangle that has zebra stripes. The conductor has to point to them every time the train pulls into the station.
Yep.
So if you find those on the platform, you can be in the same car as the conductor, which makes a lot of people feel safer. And then you're also often in a car with other people who want to feel safe.
Right. And I saw that you did a TikTok or, you know, some content about that, specifically what you just said. And I loved that. So for people to see that, that's a great suggestion. For people who might be tourists and just don't, you know, want to feel a little bit safer, you know, but yeah, in general too, I feel the subway's only way to travel, in my opinion. What's really interesting too, Megan, is Jay's grandmother was born in Harlem and she lived there for how long, right? Is that correct?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, you don't know?
A very long time.
Yeah, but yeah, that's like his grandmother was born and raised in Harlem too.
Amazing.
So I think that's fascinating. And we want to talk to her too. Soon. So, Megan, I want to ask you to tell us the story about the Double Check statue. I find that fascinating.
Mr. Double Check, I owe everything to him. So, first of all, the statue. There's a statue of a man. He is pretty much life-sized. He looks like he is going to a meeting circa 1980. If you look at his briefcase, it has all sorts of I find it interesting because it's not something that people carry to meetings today. There's like an audio recorder with a cassette tape, pencils, a package of cigarettes, where today it would be like iPhones and much more tech oriented. So I find just looking at the sculpture is a bit of a time capsule. But
it definitely takes me back to, you know, I'm older, so I could identify with what he had in his briefcase.
Yeah, I find it to be really fascinating. It's supposed to be a man who is getting ready to go to a meeting in the original World Trade Center towers. So it was positioned really close to the original World Trade Center site. And when the original Twin Towers came down, they covered so much of Lower Manhattan in this very thick white ash. And there were humans covered in this ash. A lot of people might be very familiar with, there's a photo of a woman covered in the ash. It almost looks like figurines from Pompeii, but they're alive. And this statue, this very lifelike statue, was also covered in all of that ash. And the first responders saw it and they would walk up to the statue and ask the statue if he was okay, because it was so lifelike, before realizing that it was a statue. And there's a photograph that one of the news reporters took of the statue that day, which is very, very chilling. And this is a statue that I sometimes take people to on my World Trade Center tours. He's a little bit off of the World Trade Center site, so it kind of depends on how long the tour is. But I had a goal when I first started creating content, which was to post at least once a day, if not three times a day. And that's very hard. So I was just like, I have to film something every day. And it was raining. I had just done this like virtual tour for some students in Korea. And
that's pretty cool.
It was, that was like my job for a year, about 2 years ago. And I was like, oh, I don't have anything to film. So I just took my camera out and walked around this double check statue. And I did a voiceover when I got home. And that was my first viral reel. It got me something like 100,000 followers on TikTok, which really opened up so many doors for
me. I can
me.
See why, because I loved it. Like, I mean, I was looking at your page and everything, you know, just especially for today to talk with you. And I love your story and how you did it. But go ahead.
Thank you. No, every time I see him, I thank him now because I feel like he opened up all of these doors for content creation that I literally would not have had if not for him. And, you know, it is a very tragic story and I don't want to make light of that, but I thank him for the gift that he gave me.
Is that in Zuccotti Park right there by, is that where it's
at? Yeah, he's now right across the street from Zuccotti Park.
World
he
Trade
was
Center.
In Zuccotti Park and then they moved him basically across the street into a different corner.
It was just fascinating that, you know, when you're telling the story, I was watching your video and that they thought he was a real person. And I was like, wow, I can completely understand why. So thanks for that. That was really good. Your content's really, really good. I love it. I really love it.
Thank you. So is yours.
Well, thanks. So also, the first presidential mansion. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was actually a more recent discovery of mine. What I think a lot of people don't realize is that the very first capital of the constitutional United States was in New York City. Mm-hmm. And George Washington took his oath of office on Wall Street. There's currently a giant statue pretty much exactly where he took that oath of office. And his head, I mean, the statue's huge. He was not that big. But the head of the statue is about where George Washington's head would have been standing on the second floor of the building that existed there at that time. So he had a presidential mansion. And the location of this presidential mansion was what's now underneath the Manhattan anchorage of the Brooklyn Bridge. Now, it's interesting because we have a lot of presidential homes, like Teddy Roosevelt's home, that, you know, they get torn down because we don't realize, like, we didn't know that Teddy Roosevelt was going to be president when he was a kid and when his family moved out. So they just tore down that home. And then he became Teddy Roosevelt. They were like, oh, no, we shouldn't have done that. Let's recreate it. And I feel like people didn't necessarily think of the mansion as being so precious at the time. So it was, I mean, it stood for almost 100 years, I believe, but it got torn down, and it did not get torn down for the Brooklyn Bridge. I want to be very clear. I made a piece of content where I talk about how to find the location. Mm-hmm. There's a plaque under the anchorage of the Brooklyn Bridge, the Manhattan anchorage, and you can find this plaque, and people were like, they shouldn't have torn down the mansion for the Brooklyn Bridge. No, by the time the Brooklyn Bridge was an idea, the mansion was long gone.
And your video about this specific subject that I'm asking you about the presidential mansion, you are very specific on how to get there, too. So people can go to your page. Tell me your page.
Yeah, so my page is The Megan Daily. Megan is M-E-G-A-N. So The Megan Daily, like the Daily News, but my name. And you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube.
Perfect. Yeah, you're so good at telling the specifics of how to get there. I thought it was really impressive. So that's great because that now leads into another question, which I love about the history of this, is the Brooklyn Bridge. How did it come about and who was in charge of it?
Yeah, there were kind of three key players. You had John Roebling. He was a German immigrant who had the idea for the Brooklyn Bridge. And it was really a radical idea. No bridge that long had ever existed. He basically had to create steel suspension cables to hold the bridge up, which hadn't ever been done before. So this really paved the way for like our modern day elevators that take people up to World Observatory. Wow. I mean, elevators existed before then, but mm-hmm. that like very strong steel cables. You think about how often now we see steel cables. Right. And that was a brand new thing. Nothing. I mean, the most people who walked over the Brooklyn Bridge for the very first time had never been up that high in their life.
That bridge is pretty high, too.
Yeah, like we didn't have skyscrapers. Mm-hmm. We didn't have airplanes or helicopters. So like seeing someone swoop, like a seagull swoop under your feet for the very first time, like that's very exciting. So you had John Roebling. It was his idea. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he died in a boat accident. His big toe was crushed. He died of tetanus after that. What's very sad is like they could have cured it, but he was a hydropathist. So he was like, no, I'll just soak it in some water. And like, that didn't work.
What is a hydropathist?
He believed in like water would cure everything.
I figured it was water, but I wasn't sure the specifics.
Yeah. So like he basically refused actual treatment. So he died. His son took over.
Right.
But in 1870, his son came down with the bends. He had to. So the bends has all different effects on people. A lot of times, like, scuba divers get
right, like that. I was going to ask you, like, do you know how he got it, though? Because was he scuba diving, so to speak?
He was not.
Back 100 years ago.
He was not. The construction of the Brooklyn Bridge involved men going, like, very, like, deep into the water.
Sense.
They worked in these things called caissons. I could literally, I don't want to take 3 hours to explain it because I could, but they,
I know you could, I
they
love it.
Worked in these things called caissons. Yep. And if you came up too quickly, you could
sense.
Get the bends. And some people had no like side effects. Some people literally dropped down dead.
Wow.
So some people got sick and threw up. He ended up being paralyzed from the waist down. He couldn't actually visit the site during the rest of the construction. So his wife, Emily Roebling, took over, I like to say, as field engineer. I find that there's always usually a man who's like, she wasn't actually the engineer. She never had the title. Blah, 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 blah. I was like, okay, she did the job
of
a field engineer. Like if I wasn't a licensed New York City tour guide, but still gave tours, like. I still was a tour guide.
Right.
Okay. So yes, she essentially took over as field engineer, and she was essentially the field engineer
and she
that oversaw
the bridge.
Correct.
Yeah. I love that. You know, side note here, I love the show, The Gilded Age. And I didn't know the history of the Gilded Age is a fictional show, you know, and I think like the characters are based maybe on the Vanderbilts or the Rockefellers or something.
Yeah.
But anyway, the background stories in the Gilded Age are true. And say that they have that story in the Gilded Age. And I was enthralled with that story. And now I remember walking underneath the Brooklyn Bridge when they built that new park area within a couple years ago. They have Emily Roebling's name on the ground in the cement. And I just loved it. I thought it was really cool because here we are in New York City with this historical, amazing, you know, information. And a bridge, this amazing bridge. And there's Emily Roebling's name in the cement right there.
Yeah, and she has a plaque on the bridge.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many official ways of honoring Emily Roebling that I just, when someone tries to challenge it, I'm like, look, there's a plaque on the bridge. Her name's in the cement.
Yep.
There's like a plaza named after her.
The plaza too.
You know, I believe that it was RPI. There's like a university that gave her like a engineering degree, like an honorary engineering degree. I mean, no matter what, right? This was 1870. This was 50 years before women had the universal right to vote.
Right.
This was a year when most women, if they walked up to a group of men working on a bridge and said, okay, this is how I think you should hang the suspension cables, even if literally all she was doing was repeating something her husband said, the men would be like, oh, it's so cute. You think you know how to build things? Go make me a sandwich. But she earned their respect.
She did basically build it. She finished it. And it's just a great story. And now her name needs to be heard.
I agree.
Yes.
And like people say that she learned even more than her husband knew about engineering.
Good for her.
So, Emily Roebling.
Shout out from the rooftops, my friends. Emily Roebling. It's such great information. I love talking with you. It's just, I love these New York stories, these true New York stories we're talking about. I have some questions, too, I want to ask you. Ready for some fun questions?
I hope so.
I'm going to test your knowledge.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I'm sure you know more.
This is where you guys are going to realize that I'm the worst tour guide in New York.
You are not. What's the correct order of the boroughs from largest to smallest?
From largest to smallest.
Yes.
Believe that Queens is the largest. But do we go with the Bronx or Brooklyn?
I know, that's a tough one.
I don't know.
I got the answers so before I even guessed it. So
I mean, no matter what, you have like the Bronx, you have Queens, you then have Staten Island, and you have Manhattan.
Right. So what do you think?
Or sorry, you have Queens, you have the Bronx, you have Brooklyn.
You're completely right, though.
I think it's the Bronx and Brooklyn, but it might be Brooklyn or the Bronx. I don't know.
So
it's Brooklyn.
Awesome.
We go Brooklyn, yep. The Bronx, Staten Island, and Manhattan.
Perfect. I knew you'd know it. I only knew it because I saw the answers. But if I had time to think about it, but that's I would be Queens and the Bronx. I mean, Queens and the Bronx, yes, or whatever I'm saying.
Yeah, so we have Queens, yeah. Brooklyn,
no, I don't even know.
The Bronx, Staten Island,
yep.
And Manhattan.
Manhattan.
Is this area-wise?
Yeah, I'm assuming it's area-wise. In terms of population,
right.
You got Brooklyn.
Now, with saying that, what's the most populous borough? Good question. Because now,
wait,
so Staten Island is larger
area,
than Manhattan.
Area size, yes.
Staten Island is larger than Manhattan.
What is it? It has 500,000 people living in it.
Right.
Where Manhattan has 1.5 million.
Oh, yep, I was going to say.
But Manhattan's 1/3-ish the size of Staten Island.
Really?
Yeah.
Right. No, I never knew that.
Yeah. What's the most populous borough in NYC?
I want to say Brooklyn.
It is. You know how many?
I don't.
It's just about 3 million. And also, did you hear people say this phrase before that if Brooklyn was a standalone city by itself, it would be the third largest city in the country?
Yes.
So it'd be New York City first still, then LA, and then Brooklyn. You've heard that too?
Yeah.
I like that. I like that a lot. Here's some little just fun ones. That was the only ones to pick your brain.
I'm not good at trivia. I won a trivia contest recently, but it was because
I
had...
I was supposed to go with you.
It's because
Thank you
I had,
for asking me.
Next year, we need you.
You won, I saw.
We had a really good team. I feel like that my strength was getting together a really good team. But I have to say, there's another tour guide. His name is AJ Stevens, mm-hmm. Allende Stevens. He could have probably won the whole thing himself. Adam Kuban of New York City Tourism. Oh, my goodness. He came in clutch. Ariel from
yes.
Urbanist.
Yep. I was so sad
so
to miss that.
So good. Yeah. I mean, really, like, yeah. It was a
you guys
team
won,
effort. It was
Didn't
a team
win?
Effort. We did. There was a Gossip Girl question and a Newtown Creek.
Oh, I wouldn't know Gossip Girl at all.
One, which is
I've
like,
never even seen one episode. I would not know. Okay, so here's some fun questions, too. What is BECSPK?
BECSPK?
Yeah.
Oh, my
god. At a bodega, you would get it.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. A bacon, egg, and cheese, salt and pepper.
You're almost there.
Wait. Salt and pepper.
Yep.
Oh my goodness. And ketchup.
Yes.
I'm gonna tell you about my bacon, egg, and cheese.
Yes.
I have a very specific order. And this is where like you know that I was born in Florida. I like just an egg and cheese with avocado.
Nope.
I know.
That is not, yes.
Everybody hates me now.
Yeah, that's, I won't mention that again, though.
Okay.
Oh, that's good, though. That's funny.
I was going to say, the bodegas are very accommodating.
So we'll zip through these real quick before, because we have to get going soon. Favorite place to get a bagel?
Oh, Zucker's.
Nice. I like Essa Bagel.
Essa Bagel is so good. I mean, this is hard because
yeah, really hard.
The freshest bagel is always going to be the best. And my I would always go to the Zucker's right by World Trade mm-hmm. when I was working as
yep.
a guide
good
at
one.
World
yep.
Trade.
Favorite place for a slice of pizza?
Slice of pizza. I mean, Joe's is very much my go-to.
Yep.
I have friends who work at Unregular, and I love Unregular.
I've never been there, and I've always wanted to go there.
It's a very, like, different slice, but mm-hmm. it's very good.
Good. I want to go there now that you said, because I always walk by it, and I always want to stop in there. Favorite dessert / dessert shop?
Keki's Bouncy Cheesecake. Ooh, in nice. Chinatown.
I've never been there.
Ah, it's so good. And the thing is, you're going to buy a whole cheesecake because they don't sell a slice. And you're going to be like, I can't eat a whole cheesecake. And then, like, literally 2 minutes later, you're like, I ate a whole cheesecake.
I'm going.
And I want a second one.
Well, you know what? It's actually within walking distance from us right now.
It is. Cheesecake.
I have to say, banana pudding, Magnolia.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah, that's very good.
Favorite place to get Chinese food?
Ooh, Spicy Village. Spicy Village.
Where is that?
It's on Forsyth. It's this little tiny, like, I actually made a video where I talk about how to get there. It's like Hidden Gem, or my favorite place to eat in Chinatown. And it's just this little tiny red awning. And I get it's called a pancake with beef. They have a pancake with pork, which is good. But the pancake with beef. Oh, my goodness.
Love it.
And then the Golden Unicorn, if you're going to do dim sum. Yum. And then I also like Shant Famous Foods for their spicy human lamb noodles. Shant Famous Foods.
How do you spell that first word?
XI'AN.
Wow. I wouldn't even know how to pronounce that. Impressive.
I mean, I've been told by my friends who speak Chinese, that's how you pronounce it. But I am open to being wrong.
I'm
going
to have to check those out. Favorite place for a night out? That's a hard
kind
one.
Well, I'm kind of not like that exciting, but there's a place called is it Tiki Chic, where you get like tiki drinks, and those are real good. Oh, and there's like a whole line of restaurants like Tanner Smith's, Polly's, which is a speakeasy. Mm-hmm. They also own the Dickens and Haswell Greens. All of those places are excellent.
Nice.
And Faces and Names. So all of those last places that I mentioned, like Polly's and Faces and Names, they have full kitchens, which are open until like midnight or later. So you can go there after a show, and their drinks are phenomenal.
Nice. Nice. Favorite museum?
Okay. My current favorite museum is Poster House.
What is that?
Poster House is a museum dedicated to posters. And I did not know about it. It's in Chelsea, and they have the best special events as well.
That's like, pretty cool.
I did a wine tasting and a tour about their environmental crisis exhibition, which should not have been fun because you're talking about environmental crisis. But the tour guide, I mean, and I do not say this lightly, might have been the best tour guide I have ever had. He was so good. And they paired it up with this, like, organic wine and how like vineyards can be better for the environment. And it was just that like unique New York magical moment that I'm always seeking. And I really feel like tourists would love it as well.
I love that. Thanks for telling us that. You just taught me something as well. And finally, what are your favorite three must-see spots in New York City?
Oh, my favorite three must-see spots. I mean, if I'm going to give these recommendations to a tourist, they might like who's spending, you know, 24 hours for the very first time, they might be different than my three favorite. Like, I always say that Lincoln Center is very much my happy place. In the wintertime, I love anything with an ice skating rink.
Yes.
And I love our parks. I think our parks are great. But if you are visiting, like if you're a tourist who's coming to visit for the very first time, you need to see an observation deck. I think I don't care which one you go to. You have to go to an observation deck.
And what are the five?
So we have Empire State Building, Top of the Rock, One World Observatory, Edge, and Summit. And they're nice. Like, I have like podcasts and all sorts of stuff where I talk about like how to choose the best one. But I don't care which one you go to. Go to one of them.
I agree with you.
Go to Central Park, especially like specifically enter at 72nd Street and like get to Bethesda Terrace. And then I do think if you don't go to Times Square for like even a second, you're doing it wrong. I would recommend going to Times Square.
I like that.
Kind of like looking at it, take a photo on the red steps, see a Broadway show.
Right.
And then be like, yeah, I did Times Square. And then
I'm a fan of Times Square. I love taking people there. I really do. And lastly, this is the final question. What do you feel makes you a New Yorker?
This is a great question because people love to comment on my social media that I'm a transplant from Florida who likes avocado on my egg and cheese. So obviously not my egg and cheese order. But I think that New Yorkers, there's a couple of different qualities. Like, first of all, like, we're tough. We're resilient. Like, we go through really hard times, but we, like, bounce back. I find that that's the spirit of New York. Literally, we built the Empire State Building, tallest building in the world, for 41 years during the height of the Great Depression. And I think that that's, like, very much a New Yorker quality. And also, I find that New Yorkers, we accept people. We welcome, yes, like, people who are different than us. Like, we don't necessarily have to be their best friends, but we're like, yes, like, we are diverse and we celebrate our diversity and we recognize how diversity can make something, like, bigger than the sum of its parts. An example I like to give is the cronut, which is literally a French pastry chef. An immigrant came to New York City. He observed how New Yorkers were obsessed with donuts while French people are obsessed with croissants. And he said, you know what? Let's combine these two things together to make something new and delicious. And he made the cronut. And I think that that's, like, very much a New York thing.
I love that. It's a great analogy. The cronut down on Spring Street. Is it Spring Street?
Correct. But I mean, like, you know, there's so many different examples of, like, these fusion foods. Different types of entertainment, different types of music, different types of families, like people who just are like, yes, like, let's see what we can do to combine and make something amazing.
And you know what? We did make something amazing. We made New York City. The people before us made New York City with everything that you just mentioned. I love that. Aw, thanks, Megan. That's so amazing. I love that. Was beautiful.
Thank you.
And I loved having you. This is so great. This is so great. Thank you for joining us today for this week's episode of the New Yorkers Podcast. Why don't you let everyone know where they can find you on social media, Megan?
You can find me on Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. My username is The Megan Daily, like The Megan Daily News, and Megan is M-E-G-A-N. So The Megan Daily on all platforms.
Once again, I'm your host, Kelly Kopp, also known as New York City Kopp, all across all my social media.
Please like and subscribe to the New Yorkers Podcast. And you can follow the New Yorkers on social media at the New Yorkers Podcast.
You can also leave a rating or a comment to let us know how you are enjoying the show. We read through all your comments and DMs, so please, we would love to hear from you. Thank you, Pilar, Tom, and Konisha, for your kind words on the last episode. If you want to be featured at the end of an episode, leave a rating on Apple Podcasts or a comment on Spotify.
And thank you, Bev Boyle, Ronnie Leach Jr., and Barbara Rosenfeld for your comments on Facebook.
Have a lovely day, and we will see you next time.
Goodbye.
This is the last stop on this train. Everyone, please leave the train. Thank you for riding with MTA New York City Transit.